Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Hey, young man, what are you up to? Nan spotted 5-year-old Charlie depositing a huge carton of ice cream onto the kitchen counter. Oh, I'm making a chocolate sundae, her son grinned happily. Not right before dinner, you're not, Nan responded. Please put that away immediately. Then you may get out the plates and help me set the table. Uh-uh, Charlie shook his head. Dad said I could. He's going to have some, too. Look at all the great stuff we're having. And he pointed to a jumble of containers of chocolate syrup, colored sprinkles, chopped nuts, cherries, and whipped cream all across the counter, right next to the chicken and broccoli she had been preparing for dinner. Dave, Nan called at the top of her lungs, I need you in the kitchen now. From a parent's perspective, how is marriage different once we have become parents? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests today have shared with the public all sorts of personal information about what it's like to be married with children. Diane Rehm has hosted the Diane Rehm Show on WAMU NPR from Washington, D.C. since 1979. Currently, it is distributed to approximately 90 NPR affiliates across the country, as well as internationally by Armed Forces Radio Network. She and her husband, John, have 2 grown children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Diane.
Thank you.
John Rehm, a Washington attorney specializing in international trade, both in government and private practice, is now retired. The Rehms have shared their experiences in marriage and parenting in a book called Toward Commitment, A Dialogue About Marriage. We're so glad you could join us today, John.
I'm delighted to be here.
For parents of young children, what do you feel is the biggest challenge in a marriage?
Well, you know, that story you opened with, Sandy, really, really got to me. Because I think one of the things that young couples do not discuss before they have children is, how are we going to be parents together? Will we be partners? Will we be adversaries? In that story, you've got the father committing to the child that the child can have chocolate sundaes before dinner. You've got the mother saying, no, no, you can't do this. So what are you doing? You're letting the child set up a kind of conflict, and because you, the father, might happen to be more lenient in that situation, the mother more attuned to good nutrition, you've got a big row right then and there. So I think each step of the way, in answer to your question, you've got to negotiate what parenthood is between two people and what goals you really want to have. If consistency is a goal for parenthood between two people, then Daddy would not have done that and set Mommy up for a big letdown for the kid.
I noticed in your book, John, you had commented strongly that you were raised in a household where you just could do no wrong, and Diane had different experiences.
Totally.
And so I would imagine that's not that uncommon in marriages.
I would agree. I think I would supplement what Diane has said by noting, this was certainly true in our case, that in the early years of parenting, there's a strong tendency, inclination, to devote one's time and efforts to raising the children, particularly when they're young, and disregard, really, to a greater or lesser extent, the continuing need to work at the marriage itself, that is to say, the relationship between husband and wife. Looking back, I can recall being diverted from working at, if you will, my marriage to Diane by the demands and issues raised by the children.
Well, and in addition to that, I was the one caring for the children. There you were off at the office, so when you would walk in the door, there were the kids and their
demanding attention.
Exactly,
sure.
Demanding attention, and perhaps even wanting to use you to undo
as a foil
whatever I had said they could or could not do. So it becomes a large conflict unless the two parents, as I say, work out some agreement, some relationship.
And I think today when you have two career families and both parents are not spending a whole lot of time with the kids, there must be a temptation for both of them to say, oh, come on, forget these rules. You know, we don't have that much time. Let's not make anybody unhappy. And I'm sure that sets up some problems.
You know, our daughter and son-in-law are both physicians. They have a 5-year-old boy and an about to be 2-year-old girl. Each of them works 4 full days a week. And then sometimes, of course, they have weekends when they're on call. How they manage to do that, I cannot know. Because it takes so much energy, so much scheduling, so much agreement on their part as to what they will and will not allow, that you're right that when you've got two parents who are both in very busy careers, I think it becomes even more difficult.
But I think, in contrast to my experience, they're sensitive to these issues. I think they're aware of them and do their best to try to meet the several demanding roles that they need to play as parent, as spouse, and the like. I think in that sense, they're ahead of us. Looking back, I know I took so much for granted, and one of the things I took for granted was that these roles would be easily played out, and they didn't require thought, coordination, discussion with one's spouse and the like. And I think perhaps the newer generation is more aware. Whether they're going to be more successful in dealing with the issues remains to be seen, but I think the consciousness is there.
Surely the roles were already set in place before I got there. The expectation was, and certainly from my family's point of view, my mother made the decisions about the household. My father simply went along, as was the style then. I came into the marriage expecting exactly that from John. John came into the marriage thinking, why, how come she's giving all the orders, you know? And maybe, you know, she ought to be a little more lenient here, because John's family was far more lenient with him than mine was with me.
Well, and not only more lenient, which was certainly the case, but they did not provide me, as the only child, with any kind of a model of this kind of cooperation and collaboration we're talking about between husband and wife. It simply wasn't there. My mother did certain things. My father did certain things. Rarely did they do them together. So I had a poor model, if you will, to look
after. It also meant you had free rein.
Well, that's in terms of selfish considerations, if you will. Sure, that was the beauty of it, because they both doted on me. I was never punished that I can recall, except once my father tapped me, really no more than that, tapped me on the back of the head. And they believed, rightly or wrongly, that I would know what I was doing.
How did that translate into your, not necessarily being the disciplinarian, but how you saw your role when the kids
I think
transgressed?
That's a good question, because based on my experience, I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, you see, and give them slack, if you will. Mm-hmm. Totally contrary to Diane's upbringing and the way in which she was raised and what was expected of children, I was prepared to repose a certain confidence in them that Diane was not prepared to do so, although I think you've grown in that respect.
Well, I think you have to grow, or you're going to lose the battle altogether if it is a battle. But I think John's absolutely right when he talks about the disciplinary factor in my household, which was first and foremost. I mean, my mother would simply raise an eyebrow, and I knew I had transgressed, and I was going to be in for it. There was so much that could not be done, and that I knew if I stepped over the line, I'd be in trouble. Whereas John knew he could do anything without getting into trouble. So you bring those two kinds of backgrounds and personalities together, and what do you have? I mean, we were both absolutely overjoyed when our son David was born just barely 9 months after we were married. We really wanted a child right away. But what did we know about each other? Virtually nothing.
Let me relate briefly one of my favorite stories in this regard. For reasons I've forgotten, Diane may remember, Jenny got very mad at us and stormed into her room and closed the door. But that wasn't the end of it, because on the door she tacked a notice saying, "Do not come in."
Do not enter.
Do not enter.
Yes.
And Diane saw the sign, and her immediate instinct, and that's what it was. It was an instinct. It wasn't thought out. Based upon her own experience, Diane said, and I was there, "This is intolerable." We simply opened the door, because Jenny hadn't locked it, because she just can't do this.
She was only about five or six years old.
And I, equally instinctively, without any thought whatsoever, said, "Diane, you will not do that. She is entitled to her own room, to her own door, and the space that that provides." And there was a sharp disagreement. And finally, I think Diane relented. But it's a marvelous example of how two people are coming, you know, to a very finite issue from such enormously different backgrounds.
I was never allowed to close the door to my room. So you see the differences. Mm-hmm. There was no privacy for a child in my household. So two very, very different backgrounds. And I think there are, you know, perhaps not many quite as extreme in their differences as what we've just described. But I think so many people come to marriage believing that love and sex and attraction is going to solve all problems. And that's precisely not the way it works out, and why 50% of marriages even today break up.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on marriage and Toward Commitment, a dialogue about marriage.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Diane and John Rehm today about marriage with children and their book, Toward Commitment, a dialogue about marriage.
It's interesting. We interviewed someone who was very wise in a show quite a long time ago on divorce. And she said to us, "My ex-husband and I decided the way we were going to raise our child was we wanted to do it like a business." And of course, Linda and I, our eyebrows went up. We went, it sounded dreadful. And she said, "Because we wanted the best product we could have." And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. The idea is you're working together on a product, not exactly something that comes off the assembly line.
Yeah.
But still, it's the production of two people.
Well, except the word sounds terrible.
Isn't it dreadful? I know.
I understand
it sounds like the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah. And I think she was...
You're putting your child in a can of tomato soup.
Yes. I think she was trying to tell us they were making the best of circumstances where the child was going back and forth between two households and two parents who couldn't make the marriage succeed. And so they gave up on that, and they were still trying to succeed at raising the child. Mm-hmm. So we were a little taken aback at this example. But the philosophy behind it, that we're working towards the same goals, I think helps when parents see themselves going different directions.
But, you know, it's not just a discipline matter. It becomes a war mm-hmm. between the two people in the couple mm-hmm. over who controls the household or who controls the theory of control. Who is in control here? Is Dad in control because Dad goes out and makes the money? Or is Mom in control because she stays home, fixes the meals, washes the clothes? You know, you've got all kinds of currents at work here. So what turns out in the way of discipline is coming from a far, far deeper set of principles and ideas and ideals going on, I think.
Would you say, looking back, Diane, that we did not pay enough attention to that issue and how our kids were viewing us and the roles we were playing?
Absolutely. I fully agree with you. I think that you and I got into our
own
cross
issues.
Currents as we were trying to True. Be fair and good, decent parents with them. I think the fact that they have each grown up and become such wonderful, caring human beings, I almost think...
Was in spite of what we
did. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No magical formulas here.
Well, it's a job where we learn by doing.
Absolutely.
How true.
Yeah.
And indeed, our society doesn't give us much chance to do otherwise because we get so little preparation in advance.
That's another
show.
Absolutely.
We learn it on the go.
That's exactly
well,
right.
Well, I guess I should amend that and say if we're smart, we learn it on the go. A lot of people have not even learned to do that.
But I think there is a lot more education out there now than there was when you and I raised Jenny and Davy.
I'm not sure there's more substantive guidance, but I come back to my earlier thought. I think there is a consciousness which puts him in a slightly better position to work things out or indeed to seek help.
But there are programs like this on here. Parents' mm-hmm. perspective. Mm-hmm. We did not have that as we were moving into early adulthood. Look at how many magazines there are mm-hmm. out there. Parents magazine, Child magazine. Look at the paraphernalia that's out there for young children. The whole society has now
become...
Well,
but you raise an interesting question because if we have seen, and I think you're right, we have a growth of such aids and assistance. But look at how high the divorce rate is. Suggesting that even with the presence of all this material, it somehow hasn't sunk in.
Well, we've become fractured extended families, isolated nuclear families. Great Aunt Sarah is not down the block to tell
Quite
us
right.
that, yes, Uncle Jim mm-hmm. had the same problem. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Our support system is pretty shot.
Yeah.
And I think that's why all these other aides are there, but they can't make up for people. And so
True.
I think there's
True.
We're lacking in some things that we used to have. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on marriage with children.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Diane and John Rehm today about marriage with children.
One of the things that happens that you hear frequently is when the children leave home, they go to college or they get married and move away, then the marriage falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
Then the truth comes out that all those years you weren't working on the marriage, you just managed to get those children raised. Why do you think this happens?
Well, I can only speak from our experience. I think it was a mixed blessing when those kids, one by one, left. Because simultaneously, when Jenny left, she went off to boarding school but came home on weekends. David is our older one, so he was already out of the house. So Jenny's departure was more gradual than David's. But on the one hand, I had just taken the job as host of the Diane Rehm Show back in 1979. That was at the same time Jenny was starting boarding school. So I felt a certain relief that she was cared for, that I would not have to worry about being at home at 3 o'clock. There was a certain freedom there. There was a certain freedom in knowing that John and I would not necessarily have to have what the kids wanted for dinner at night. We could have what we wanted for dinner. There was a certain freedom in that if we wanted to go out at night, we could do that without concern. On the other hand, there was also that sense that here were the two of us. Finally, yeah. Comes down to two people who are living in the same house together. No distractions. Maybe we still had a dog and a cat then. But no distractions. And I think that's where the problem comes in. Because the problems, the distractions get sort of filtered off to the kids early on. And then once they're gone, you've got the two of you left.
Do you have any suggestions for couples for what they should be watching for before things go awry?
I think that people need to acknowledge to themselves that life is about to change and to make some provision for that change, whether it be making plans to be with friends more often or making plans to be quiet more often. One of the issues that John and I have had to deal with over our 44-year period of marriage is his need for solitude and my need for being with people. So that when Jenny and Davey left, I mean, here, John could have a quiet house all day and all night and be perfectly satisfied. I had to find ways to entertain myself. And what I did was to make more time for friends. Either on my own, have dinner with friends 2 or 3 nights a week, or have friends in a couple of nights a week. Those are the kinds of adjustments that I had to make to please myself. He, on the other hand, as I say, would just as soon sit down with a New Yorker and spend all day by himself. Isn't that fair?
Yeah, but to return to the Harvard Business School analogy, which you were making earlier, it sounds sort of both trite and unrewarding, but this is perhaps one of the cases, and there are others, where the two in the relationship need to sit down and talk it through. It sort of goes against the grain of, a romantic relationship and the beauty of a love affair and how it can create the illusion that these issues can be easily overcome. But in making the product, as it were, in this case.
The marriage.
The marriage, exactly. It does require a kind of consciousness, awareness.
Negotiation,
mm-hmm. Collaboration. All the sort of dull words,
yeah.
And yet they really play a vital role if the relationship is to continue.
It's interesting because I think my friends and I have talked about this together. Somehow we as women, I can only speak for women because I am a woman, want our partners to read our minds, to know what it is that we want without our having to ask for it. And I think that unless one does, as John has suggested, sit down and share orally what it is I want or you want, it's a game, and you're going to keep making those same mistakes over and over again. But that central point in our marriage, that need on his part to be alone, my need to be with people, was accentuated when David and Jenny left the house. So that was something we needed to talk about. And he'd say, where are you going tonight? And I'd say,
do you think we talked about it in a systematic fashion?
No,
I'm not sure we did. We sort of bumped along, as most people do, carrying with us expectations which might have been totally unrealistic, and yet somehow clinging to the hope that our expectations will be satisfied.
But it's clear, both in your conversation and in your book, that there was a very definite recognition of different kinds of needs, just as you describe, and an acceptance. We're two different kinds of people. I'm going to have to let him be himself, and he's going to have to let me.
We didn't get to that until
took a long time.
very late.
That's the point I was going to make. All too often, couples may have a kind of vague unease about what's going on in their relationship, but for a variety of reasons, maybe in part an acknowledgement that you don't want to admit difficulties and problems in your marriage. In any case, things get pushed aside and they need some external catalyst, if you will, to get them to sit down and discuss some of these things. I think that's, if our book has any value, that is it, to provoke people to do just that.
We are so glad, Diane and John Rehm, for you to have been with us. It's been an honor to have you.
Thank you so much.
Great fun. Thank you.
We enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Diane and John's book, Toward Commitment. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 222. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Diane and John's book, Toward Commitment, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.